Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello, everybody.
Watcher.
We're back.
We're back with some more chat.
Yes, more games have been played.
We have. And I'm quite nervous this week because you've got a large A4 book covered in, what, three or four pages of notes?
No, it's two pages of notes.
Normally you don't do any prep at all for these shows.
There was a
Sometimes
game,
you don't even play games.
There was a game that required notes.
Right, yeah, so this might sort of turn very quickly into a topic show, by the looks of things.
You'd better start.
I think I'll just start and try and get a game in before you launch, yeah. Guns of Icarus Online. Now, I don't know, regular long-time listeners will remember I probably may have mentioned this a while ago. I did get it a while back and have a dabble with it. This is basically a kind of four-player versus four-player versus four-player type team PvP game with lobby and matchmaking and so on that takes place in airboats, zeppelins, steampunk zeppelins with cannons on the side and stuff, and big gas bag balloons and galleon hulls and stuff over various deserts
and
fjords.
Doesn't sound very practical.
It's totally bonkers, but it absolutely captures the spirit of what steampunk's all about. And it also manages somehow, I spent some time reading some of the backstory and the lore to find out what was going on with it all, why we're in these flying sky galleons firing cannons at each other. Not that you even need a reason, but
of course not.
And it turns out that this game manages to contrive to be both post-apocalyptic and steampunk at the same time, ticking both boxes. I think it's supposed to be our Earth, but after a massive war and, you know, climate change and everything, you know, after the end type of thing. I don't know. There's not an awful lot of backstory and lore in the game itself either, really. I mean, it's had a lengthy sort of history. There's something called Guns of Icarus.
Yes.
Which I've never played, and which quite a lot of people haven't played, and those that didn't really like it a lot, looking at the Metacritic scores of 40 or less.
That's always a good reason to do a sequel.
It swept the board with 4 out of 10s when it came out. Apparently it's like a sort of on-rails shooter where you're basically on a gun turret, and you're on one of these sky galleons, the Icarus of the title, but it's apparently not a very good rail shooter that sort of flies
around
the desert.
Is there any such thing as a good rail shooter?
I don't know. I've never played this thing. So I came to this sort of sometime later when they, after a successful Kickstartering, I think this was a Kickstarter thing to begin with.
Most things are.
Yeah, they put together some kind of team PvP thing, and it is absolutely bonkers and a lot of fun. It's definitely something that you want to play in teams with friends, though. That's the one thing I've taken away from all this, because the first time I played it, I did a lot of random drop-in stuff, and you basically end up on this boat. You have a character who can first person run around the boat, and you get to use various stations on the boat. I think anyone who remembers Star Wars Galaxy's multi-crewed jump to light speed ships will know the kind of thing.
Running around kicking the engines.
Yeah, running around repairing stuff, or sitting on the gun turrets shooting stuff, or flying the boat or the ship in question. This is all taking place in the skies above deserts full of roiling clouds and northern Nordic fjords full of crashed machinery and big fog banks and so on. It does look pretty good, the sort of cloud cover and the atmospheric essence, and just the look and feel of the boat design as well is fantastic as well. Rich decadent steampunk gothic boats and so on. And yes, you get to do one of three things on the boat in your team. You get to drive the boat. There's a pilot station. There's the gunner class, who sort of runs around and uses various fixed turrets on different facings of the boats. And most of these boats will have more guns than gunners on board. So you will have to get off the gun, run to the other side of the boat, jump on the gun and
That's
fire.
No fun.
That kind of thing. So you don't just sit on the same turret the whole match. You're running around trying to make advantage of the best facing as your pilot tries to line up the decent guns on the enemy. And then there's an engineer. All of these bits and pieces are hit locations, which can take specific damage from other incoming fire off of other boats, and you have to run around and belt these systems with a spanner, and it is literally clang, 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 hit repeatedly with rubber mallet. It's very satisfying. I like it. Yes, I don't know really why. I like steampunk and I like post-apocalyptic, and I think the world needs more zeppelins, you know?
That is true.
Pretty much every parallel universe story in science fiction comes down to there being a lot more zeppelins in the sky than there are in this parallel universe, and I often think I've gone down the wrong leg of the trousers of time.
Even GTA 5 has zeppelins.
Exactly. Yeah, it worked for Christopher Walken in that James Bond thing.
That's true, yes.
Zeppelins is the future, you see. So here is a game where you get to be a captain of one and
technically
and shoot
it should
at
be
them.
Pointed out the Zeppelin is a brand name.
Oh, that airship then, whatever. Good grief. But yeah, so I was playing it, I don't know, about half a year ago when I first got it and I was dabbling around with it. And what really put me off back then was just the same pickup group-based horrors that you see when you try and get involved in team play as an individual with random players in almost any online experience. So, but we were playing Rift and I think we were people short again, so we didn't have a full team. And so, and a couple of us turned out to have this Guns of Icarus thing. So I thought, why don't we all fire it up and have a go and see how we do with that? I think I had some spares that I dished out as well. Those are all gone now. Because I think I bought a 4-pack back in the day because I just thoroughly approved of the plan of what they were doing, so I thought I wanted to support it. But so we ended up, I don't know, I'm not sure what happened, but we ended up with, I put an alert in the Steam group, and we ended up with about 9 people turned up, and we were all on Mumble, and we managed to set up a couple of private games, and it's an absolutely different experience. I mean, the pickup group thing where you know, you just quick join and you end up in on a boat with 3 random strangers, and one of them quite shouty at the helm. It has integrated voice chat, so they are literally quite shouty sometimes. And you've got no idea what's going on, and you end up rolling into pre-made strangers groups of 4 who just sort of sail around decimating everyone, and on the whole it becomes quite an unsatisfying experience.
That's always the problem with multiplayer. The people who know what they're doing spoil it for everyone else.
Yeah. Well, it's unavoidable, but, you know, they do have a beginner's match. These are beginner's matches we're playing as well. I think that you're limited to... class levels 1 to 3. With the beginner toggle on, you are limited to 2 of the early intro boats. I think the Goldfish and the Pyramidian. There's about 10 or so different types of Sky Galleon in there. And I think the loadouts on the gunnery are fixed as well. You can't choose custom guns to go on the hard points.
It doesn't matter because you know what you're doing. The beginners don't, so you're always going to win.
I know. I just don't think any of those things that it limits you as a novice are things that... are the problem.
Those are things to work around and use, not a problem.
I suppose it makes for a more formalised type of game where you know specifically what's likely to be happening, but you have to be something of an expert to appreciate that in the first place. It's all a bit weird. But anyway, so then you end up in two... So there'll be 2 boats with 4 players on each. It has computer AI slots for crew if you can't fill a whole boat full of 4 players.
Is that a recipe for disaster?
Well, the computer AI is reasonably good at repairing and reasonably good at gunning if you use the F keys to set their aggressive defensive behaviours and so on. But what happens is the AIs will never pilot the boat. They won't get on the wheel. So if it's just you on the boat, you've got to get up there and actually fly the thing around, do the moving it through the sky thing and just hope the AI can do the gunning for you. But the problem with the game is you get a lot of people dropping out, and I think when you're doing random stuff, there is a lever count. I don't remember that was there when I was playing it the first time round. But if you quit a game mid game because you're too cool for school or whatever, or you've got no stamina, or you just don't want to put up with it all till the end, then you get a mark on your character, and that tally can be seen presumably. So, I mean, you know, random team PvP throughout the MMO games world is always beset with the problem of what do you do about people who just quit if they don't like the look of the odds right at the start, because that obviously dooms the rest of the team to the failure, because mostly a team with 4 players versus a team with 3 players in most cases is going to go to the team with 4 players.
Oh yeah.
So if you log in and you see that someone's already quit, and then you think, oh god, now I'm going to have to just, you know, stick it out to the end in a losing condition and do my best. No, but I don't get... Because these games have to start... They start piling on penalties, debuffs and so on, you know, with... certainly in MMO matchmaking, you'll end up with some sort of penalty debuff for half an hour or something if you quit out. I mean, it can be really hit and miss. I mean, what I've seen sometimes when I've been playing solo is when it's the best one is when you all log on and you all turn up in the boat ready to start the match, and the bloke with the little ship's wheel over his head, who has signed up to be the pilot, is just sat there. So your boat is just sat there, and there's all us engineers and gunners running around ready for action, and the boat's just sitting there being shot at, not moving. Eventually I just go, right, bollocks, give it here, and I run up to the helm and just take charge, you know. You've got three player classes in there. And what that does is that gives you 3 equipment slots for items that help with doing that job, and 1 equipment slot for items that do the other 2 jobs.
Okay.
So anyone can fly the boat, anyone can fire a gun, anyone can hit a balloon with a spanner. But if you if you specialise in engineering, you can pick three different types of repair tool, each like a fire extinguisher, which is quite useful, and one that's good at buffing stuff, or one that's good at repairing a broken system instead of improving the health of a live system, and so on. And same with the pilot, they get better things for steering the boat with, they get three slots of item, but you can still bring one item that does the other job, so everyone can sort of cross profession, as it were, on the boat. And the idea and the challenge of it all, and if this game has integrated voice chat, the idea is to try and work together as a team to get your boat up there and kicking ass on enemy boats around the skies. And it can be quite sort of sudden and quick if you're sort of joining random teams, because various people have different amounts of idea of what's going on. But what I found really enjoyed when we did all of our basically I set up a closed match, private match, that just us lot could go into, and we had some AIs to fill up the rest of the slots, and it was brilliant. We had two boats on each side, and the last second match, as everyone was starting to get the hang of it and worked out what was going on, it took a good 20 minutes or so, probably a bit longer. And yeah, it wasn't one of these, it's all over 5-0. Basically, the winning team is the team that kills five boats, and you just keep respawning until that total has been met by one side or the other. And typically, with the random join thing, it'll all be over in about 5 to 10 minutes at tops. Whereas we were going for 25 minutes or so, and desperately trying to get the angle on each other, and it became really quite a challenging and fun tactical exercise. And everyone was running around to hitting things with spanners and firing off guns, and just the chaos on Mumble as well was brilliant. So we're going to try and do that again this week. I think I've been shouting about it a bit on Twitter and set up a Steam event thing again. And I think that in the time during that, Steam put it on for 75% off as well, which makes me think they're stalking us.
They are. They use us as the
we are the zeitgeist
to see exactly what is successful.
So quite a few people grabbed that. Still not too late, I suppose, to grab it and join us. We're going to try. I think we'll probably try it for a few weeks. It doesn't strike me as the sort of thing you'd play for months and months and months. I think the novels you might wear off sooner rather than later. But I think we'll get a good couple of weeks out of it. And who knows, even get some sort of fixed static teams of four on the go, and perhaps a little mini tournament. Depends on the level of interest, really. Depends if people enjoy it or don't come back. But I just love it. It really is almost nothing like anything else I've played, apart from, that Star Wars Galaxies. And even then, the Jump to Lightspeed stuff, that only applied to the very top end.
Yeah, only a couple of ships had that.
It was five ranks of piloting in there, and I think it was only the rank 5 ship for each Empire and the Neutrals. Damn you, Neutrals. But basically, there was some big Imperial shuttle thing and a big Rebel transport thing, both of them made up. I don't really remember seeing in any of the films. And the Millennium Falcon for the Neutrals, and that was the one reason people went neutral with this piloting thing, is because they were the people who got the Millennium Falcon at the end, the YT-1300 thing. And that was a multi-crew ship. It was a bit clumsy, a bit clunky, and a bit prone to somebody, if someone forgets to repair a leaky plasma pipe, killing everyone on board suddenly. That was my memories of it.
That tends to happen when you're shooting stuff in a vacuum.
Yeah,
stuff tends to explode.
The hit locations on a Guns of Icarus ship are a bit more forgiving. It's just individual weapons will stop working that well, and the individual gunner can get off the gun and hit it with their own spanner to fix it and get back on again. A dedicated engineer's got a lot of other stuff to worry about, like the gas bag and the hull and the engines and so on. But yeah, it's only if the hull itself goes all the way to empty that your ship blows up. So you've got plenty of reaction, plenty of time to get out of the way and to get stuff fixed back up. So it's remarkable how quickly a ship can go from almost dead to back to full health again in that game if you've got some decent people running around hitting things with hammers and so on. So, it's not quite such... It's not really a sort of instant death, line up, if whoever fires the first shot wins the game type of thing. It is a real solid pounding away, broadsiding type of game. And a lot of tactical work with teams working together to get a good lineup for shots or staying out of the enemy's firing arc, and also the healing role, the engineering role, keeping it all going. It's good. It strikes me as one of those games where you got enormous potential to specialise and learn and do well, and that can be a double-edged sword, as you say. Yeah, when you join your team into a random game and come across a team of four pre-mades who really know what they're doing. Yeah, it can go quite south quite quickly, I suppose. But I don't know, it just seems really refreshing and I'm really enjoying it. So we'll have to see what kind of interest there is for keeping a sort of longer term.
So we're running it again
going.
On Tuesday?
Tuesday, yeah. It's going to be the Tuesday game. We're probably talking 8 o'clock UK time. I'll try and remember to keep putting the little Steam event things. Do check the Steam event, because I don't think you get any notifications generally. You'll get one when the event is actually happening. And does it broadcast when I start, when I create it? Does it broadcast?
Yeah, when you create it broadcasts.
Yeah.
Which is a bit annoying.
Yeah. I am trying not to try not to spam that.
You should try and do that around the time where the event would be kicking off, that time of day.
Okay.
So that people can see it around the sort of time they're usually playing.
So, but there's the How to Murder Time Steam group has an events tab, and I'm trying to put stuff in there. But yeah, Guns of Icarus Online, I recommend a look. Like I say, not a vast thing that's going to last many, many months, but as a sort of a bit of a change from what we normally do on a Tuesday, which is typically seems to be whatever MMO has gone free to play most recently. A bit of a change of pace. Judging by the mumble and the hilarity we had last Tuesday, I think a lot of folks seem to enjoy it. So we're going to do some more of that and try and make a bit of a go of it and see how far we go.
Excellent. So, shall I talk about...
Yeah, go on then. You can talk. Right. Settle down, everyone.
This is Beyond Two Souls, David Cage's latest opus.
Now, I have no idea what this is, really. I did no research. You said something, Heavy Rain.
It's the game after Heavy Rain. Mm. He made this after making Heavy Rain.
So we're talking very much a kind of quite pretentious arty auteur type experience here.
He'd like to believe so, yes.
Okay. Fair enough.
It's basically a game with reasonably brilliant likenesses of Ellen Page and Willem Dafoe.
Right.
Basically wandering around the world.
Ellen Page?
Yeah.
No, well, off Ellen, the chess.
Ellen Page.
Oh, right, sorry.
Different person. it's basically one of those really good-looking games where you have to do stuff.
Okay.
My first comment about it was, unlike in Heavy Rain, I didn't get given any origami to do while I installed this time.
Oh, that's a shame.
That's one point off the score to start with.
Well, if these PS3 games are renowned for taking so damned long to install and patch, the least they could do is give you a mini game of some sort.
It didn't actually take too much time to do, but I just missed the lack of origami.
You could always bring your own origami.
Yeah, I could.
I think you're allowed to.
Yeah, so
it's not like cinemas where they throw you out for bringing a packed lunch.
They throw you out for bringing origami as well.
Sorry, carry on.
So you got these facial reconstructions of well-known actors and Ellen Page.
I have to say, I hadn't heard the name before, no.
No, you don't watch... Well, no.
I don't watch anything, really.
But you know what Willem Dafoe looks like.
I've seen Willem Dafoe before. He'll do pretty much anything. Willem Dafoe
has a face which, if you want a recognisable face where you're banking on whether or not your reconstruction of the face will look anything like it, you go for Willem Dafoe, you just think, is that... Oh, yeah, that must be Willem Dafoe with that shaped face.
Yeah.
Because he has a face which is shaped.
Needed no makeup at all to be the Green Goblin for Spider-Man. It was remarkable.
Weird. Yeah. And that actually works really well. The facial acting, everything is brilliant on it.
This isn't the first one that he's done either. He was in that James Bond game with Pierce Brosnan.
GoldenEye?
Everything or Nothing?
Oh, Everything or Nothing, yes.
Which was essentially a James Bond film that was only on the console.
And it was on Xbox One, I think.
Quite a while ago now.
That was an interesting game. That had one of the most annoying first levels ever, where you're running outside of a building.
Anyway.
I must play that again. They're very recognisable. The acting's pretty good. People have said that Willem Dafoe's acting's a bit flat. They obviously don't watch enough Willem Dafoe stuff. That is Willem Dafoe.
Is he most at home covered in ping pong balls?
I think he might be.
Mm.
Yeah, and the entire story is rather annoyingly told through flashbacks. You jump around the story. The prologue's the end, and then you jump through back to when she's a kid, to when she's a teenager, to when she's an adult.
Right.
And you're seeing her story pulled together for all the various events. So the consequences to an event will happen before you see what the event was that caused it.
What are we talking here? Is this like a detective thing?
It's a good question.
Is it like a psychological thriller, or is it...
It doesn't know.
Okay.
Basically, Ellen Page is playing a character who has this thing attached to her.
Ew.
this spiritual thing which won't leave her alone and has the ability to affect the world around it, to possess people.
It's like a poltergeisty type
sort of
thing,
yes.
Righto.
Which comes from a different dimension, which I won't say too much.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it is quite interesting.
It's an interesting enough setup.
And so she gets hired. So she spends most of her life in a research facility being studied by Willem Dafoe.
Okay.
Because whenever she's allowed out, it always goes badly. Because he gets a bit jealous, does stuff, or she just gets into bad situations because she's never been outside before.
This is all sounding quite harrowing so far.
Yeah, it's reasonably harrowing. Yes, quite harrowing in places, actually. Yeah. And so, basically, after a while in this research thing, this is not really a spoiler because it's the main bit of the plot, she gets sent off to the CIA to be an operative.
Okay.
Because she has various abilities, like
powers.
And she has powers. She can affect stuff remotely or possess someone and get them to kill themselves or just kill someone.
Okay.
Very selectively, though.
Hmm.
She can only affect certain objects, not everything. She can remote project through this guy who's called Aiden, this creature. But can only go through certain doors and things, can't get too far away.
That's starting to sound a little bit video gamey.
It's very, very video gamey.
Her abilities only work on doors that need a red key card, not a yellow key card.
She's got this ability where she could be invulnerable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, jump off a train, be fine. There's other times when...
That's a whole story there, isn't it?
Yeah.
That one ability.
And there's other times when that ability would be really useful to use. or there's times where... She's in a sticky situation, and if only Aiden would bother doing anything, he could get her out of it quite happily.
Yeah. Even if Aiden is a malevolent spirit, surely there's a certain amount of enlightened self-interest there, you know. Must keep the girl alive, or I can't mess about with stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, gameplay is... The best way to describe gameplay is to describe one of the levels you have to do when you start at the CIA.
All right.
They've taken a training montage.
Ooh.
Immediately, you're flicking into the Team American music.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's what I did immediately. But it forces you to play out the montage.
That's absolutely the opposite of what a montage is.
And what it's for, yes.
Wow.
So basically,
that's clever. That's deep.
Yeah, there'll be a bit of you running through a assault course. And now, like in Heavy Rain, the way you control it is you have to use your controller to flick in a direction hold a button or hold a combination of buttons.
I remember seeing you play in Heavy Rain now, and it was this bonkers collection of quick time events taken to the absolute extreme max.
The game is a quick time event.
Yeah.
So you'll be going through this... assault course, you have to flick up to go up over a log, down to go under a log, do a combination of left one and right one to climb up onto...
But it wasn't even that intuitive, Heavy Rain.
Oh, no,
it just kept making up new press combos for completely unrelated new activities you'd never seen before, and then not using the same ones twice in a row.
And then there's a bit of combat-y bits where you have to move the right... control stick in the direction that she is moving,
right?
Which I get right about 75% of the time, because when somebody's swinging
at
you,
it sounds so arbitrary.
It is incredibly arbitrary.
Do a thing. Actually, I'm doing a thing. Was it the right thing? No. Oh, back to the checkpoint.
And so you go from swinging punches and avoiding to you could be lying in bed, and then you have two options, left or right. So you go left, and she turns over onto her.
Press right. X to turn over during while sleeping.
No, it's not. You flick the switch to turn over, then you flick the controller the other way to turn to the other side, then you hold X to make her go to sleep. This five times.
There's a mini game to make the...
five different times in this game it makes you go through this. One time she doesn't, which is why they did it.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever heard of a mini game to make the character fall asleep.
It gets worse.
Wow.
Yeah. At one point, there was a young
pregnant...
I can see
why you read notes here. This is brilliant.
There's this young pregnant lady...
Yes.
...who is about to give birth.
Yes.
So, you help her give birth.
Yes.
And it's basically...
Press X to contract.
No, yeah, one of them is push, one of them is breathe, one of them is reassure. You know what? I am not qualified to be able to say when to breathe and when to push.
And to be honest, I think you're still not qualified to give birth. No. I don't think this game's taught you anything useful. No.
If anything, my only experience in the matter is at the other end of the process, which doesn't help in this point. So I didn't know whether or not to push or breathe or whatever. And yeah, in the end, she gave birth to a baby, which was fine in the end, but it was a little traumatic at the time because I didn't know what to do.
Did you play through that sequence thinking, oh, if I press the wrong button combo, something horrifying's going to happen to the child?
No, because it's nearly impossible.
Was it obvious that whatever you do, you could just like walk away, get a cup of tea, and it would play itself
out
fine
anyway? No, it does
automatically
pick a default option if you don't do stuff.
Oh, so this game will play itself?
Mostly, apart from the walking around bits.
I don't know what to do. I'll give it here then.
The thing about this game is there is very little in it which has any effect. You'll make a choice, something will happen. It has no effect on the rest of it.
Well, this is
the only thing that affects the endings is who you let live and die, effectively.
So at the very end, you get a big Paragon Renegade trigger choice or something.
Oh, no.
Most of the way through, it's just...
There's something like 20-something endings, which are all mildly different.
Complete quick time event to see next bit of preset story.
Yeah, effectively.
It sounds a lot like Dragon's Lair. The old arcade game where you put your 10p in and then
Dragon's
watch
Lair
a cartoon and sometimes have to press left correctly to watch the next bit.
Dragon's Lair doesn't have quite the scope of this. So basically this game is more puppetry than gameplay. And
to be honest, it's not sounding a lot like a game.
It's an interactive puppet show.
Yeah.
It's like you take an Aardman animation and you have to move the characters yourself.
See, I don't know. I mean, is this lampshading the whole thing? Is this the extreme end of what most games try to do, as most story games these days, which is you do a bit of running and gunning on a level, and then the next bit of the film is played out for you. Like, talking Mass Effect, Assassin's Creed, you know, all these sorts of games that are generally held up as quite good story games. They still generally are a film cut into bits with some game
in
between.
And I know exactly what he's trying to do, and I understand what he's trying to do.
Is this the ultimate extreme of that?
It is, yes. Mm. And it does really show. It puts...
You just essentially got... What you got there is essentially what? A sort of 10-hour cut... 10-hour movie?
11, 12-hour movie,
During which you have to keep pressing the remote control every...
it's also... it's a 10, 11-hour quick time event with very, very forgiving responses.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not a particularly bad thing. This is not a bad game. A lot of people have said it's bad.
Oh,
but
yeah, well, if you've got to have quick time, then it needs to be reasonably doable. Otherwise, that can wind people up in time as well. But, I mean, there's a wider issue here in that what purpose does this serve?
Oh, no,
would you have preferred to have just seen the cutscenes? I bet someone probably has already done this on YouTube.
If you were just watching the cutscenes, it would be really boring.
It wouldn't be a great film.
Because it's not a great plot. Ah. It's a David Cage. David Cage isn't the world's best writer.
Okay.
So the plot doesn't really make sense. In fact, the entire bit up to a bit in the desert, which is a long way in, is pretty much dull. And then it kicks off. You end up in the desert and you're doing some stuff with Native Americans and working out what happened. And that, although, again, it's not very interactive, you're following a mystery and it turns into a bit more of an adventure game type thing.
Okay.
And that works really well. And at that point, you think, I'm really enjoying this. I was getting annoyed until this point, but this is doing something which I'm actually enjoying.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like the montage you described sounds like the problem it has all the way through. Then, if it's taking way too long to make the user press square, trumpet, hook, sing, you know, left flipper just to get through things like eating cereal, most of the way through.
There was one point when.
We don't need that level of detail. We don't care. We're not after that sort of minutiae. Have that all done away in a cutscene. That's fine. What we want to do is driving the car, being chased by the bad guys, shooting a gun.
There was one point...
Those are the interesting things that make for interesting games.
Yeah. There was one point when I was definitely afraid that it was about to make me hold X to pee.
Oh, God. And yeah, it starts to seem almost like a self-parody of and a greater parody of video gaming in general. You know, what can we turn into a game? We can turn all this mundane life activities into gameplay if we just pepper it with enough button presses.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. An
start to wonder
concept.
If this chap's just taking the piss out of all of us with this.
Yeah, well, no,
is that what this is about?
He thinks he's doing something, or believes he's doing something, which is a bit more charitable way to say it. he's doing something.
He's following his dream.
And he's trying something different. And I agree, it's good that he's doing this.
Well, it's interesting, I suppose. It's a bit different.
The thing I came up with during the week was the fact that we need people like David Cage and we also need people like Molyneux to do things which go wrong because they're the most interesting things that happen in gaming.
Well, yeah, I mean, the industry becomes very safe. You just see Call of Duty alikes, GTA alikes and so on.
Everyone complains about these people doing weird stuff and never ever following through on their vision.
That's fine. Did you like it? Did you enjoy it?
At the end, yes. The first 4 or 5 hours were painful, which is not a good thing. And if you look at the way this is reviewed, the non-gamers have tended to review it better than the gamers.
Because you're starting to move outside of what the traditional expectation
of a lot of people would say, incorrectly, that it's not a game. Because, you know, there's no real risk, nothing really matters, and all you're doing is you're enjoying a story, making a couple of choices which will make an effect later on. But then again, that's all that ever really happens in Mass Effect. It gives you this illusion of changing lots of stuff.
You get a meter for your choices and some snappier different dialogue.
And there may be a callback to something later, but you don't really have any choice. The story always goes the same way.
But then,
the stories are just as linear as this. I mean, it's just you have more interaction along the way.
Yeah, but then people playing Mass Effect, are they really playing it for the story? I know that's a big part of it in Mass Effect's case, but the whole business of hiding behind rectangular boxes, using rectangular guns to shoot rectangular robots.
There's a bit of this.
the basic gameplay of Mass Effect, is that interesting? Is that justify its own, its own
that's
ticket?
That's the thing. The gameplay, well, Mass Effect 1, no.
The
shooting did not work in Mass Effect 1, but Mass Effect 3, the shooting worked really, really well.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting game in itself. I sort of found myself looking forward to the running down rectangular corridors, shooting, hiding behind boxes bits of it, as well as the kirking the yeoman sections. Yeah. But
so you might as well ask, was Mass Effect 1 worthwhile as a game? Which, you know, obviously was.
It depends how much of a mix people want. I suppose this might be accused of being a bit too filmy.
It's very filmy.
A bit too much story and a bit not quite enough gameplay, whereas the opposite could be true of many games that, like Call of Duty or whatever, where, you know, there's token story at best.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, the biggest problem with this story is the fact that it's all over the shop. It goes from kid growing up in a facility, it does CIA missions in Somalia, it does wandering around an hour.
How long does each section of that take, typically?
Some only 10, 20 minutes, some longer.
Because that's a cinematic technique and a story writing technique, this whole flashback, flash forward and so on. But typically, when you've only got a 2-hour film to do it in, the individual flash sequences are much, much shorter than what you will have likely have seen in here. Is that going to be part of the problem?
No, I don't think so.
Is that you're there so long that you're getting used to this particular section?
Sometimes,
and then suddenly,
some of the sections are a little too drawn out and it takes too long to get there. The Somalia thing especially, you have to go through 3 different locations and do the same thing at each one effectively, which, you know, it smacks a bit of, why is it always 3? but the stuff like the stuff in the desert is great and I wanted that to be longer. And towards the end, my initial reaction was, this has gone a bit Bond. Then it shifted and it was, oh no, this has actually gone a bit Nolf.
Yeah.
And when the submarines and the underwater base and everything.
No One Lives Forever was very much playing the whole spy thing for comedy the way through. And it, you know, that kind of thing worked quite well.
Yeah. Most interesting thing about the entire game, and the bit which is me most excited about it, is the last shot of the game itself, which sets up for a really interesting sequel I'd like to play, but made by someone else, please, who understands gameplay.
Oh, sequel cliffhanger, really?
Oh, no, they're never going to make the sequel.
Well,
it's just saying that something's going to happen, and there's the endings I've seen. I did one playthrough, and then it lets you pick from a list of 4 people who you want to spend the rest of your life with.
Okay.
And I just went through those last night to check them all off. One of them has a different
achievement
ending.
Achievement hunting, was it?
No, it's not. Well, no, the achievement is, one of that is I have to play most of the game 27 times.
Why is that? Why do we do that? I've done exactly the same thing with the Mass Effect games. I played through as the way I would like, you know, given each of those choices. I went with Paragon stuff because I like to think I'm a nice person, but I just went through, and any of these BioWare morality meter games, I find myself compelled to go through and play it as a bastard, playing against my nature, making uncomfortable choices I don't want to do, just because I believe I have to see all the content I've bought.
Yeah, there's definitely something
about
that.
Why can't I just play Mass Effect as Paragon, be content with the end, and walk away?
Well, I think this did it better.
Why do I feel I have to? I'm doing this again now with Dishonored. I haven't really written it on the board, but I've been playing a bit Dishonored this week, and I'm playing through in high chaos mode, which essentially means you go through killing everyone instead of knocking them unconscious, and that's, you know, it's personally quite distasteful to me, but I find myself doing it just because I want to see what else is in this game.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Well, this actually, I did want to try those endings to see how each one played out, because there are interesting characters there. Basically, the plot is a little hobo for a lot of it, where you're just wandering around, coming across people, helping them, and going off into the distance.
Okay, fair enough. Not a bad format.
No, and so, you know, there's a bunch of homeless people which you help out, and there's the people in the desert and whatever. And so you can go back and spend the rest of your life with various people you met along the way. And I just wanted to see how each one of them played out. And the interesting thing is one of those has a different ending than the others in the future.
Okay.
Which is interesting, which I would like to know where that would have gone if it was ever going to go anywhere.
Yeah. So an interesting story that you want to look around all the corners and stuff.
No, it's a good game, and I don't recommend anyone buys it because it's so short. But
it's a good game, but don't buy it!
But...
Yes.
Wait till it comes
on... Is it an important game?
It's an important game, yeah. No, wait till it comes on PlayStation Plus, which it will.
All right.
And then download it then, because you've got
PlayStation... listening has got PlayStation Plus? I thought that was a bit of a...
No, everyone who's got a PlayStation should have PlayStation Plus, because you get a couple of good games per month.
Okay.
This month's games are... Well, November's games are... There's... there's a horrory one that you might be
reading. I remember them introducing PlayStation Plus, and we were all really sarcastic about it all, being a cynical money grab.
Yeah, and then they started giving us one or two good games a month.
Oh, okay.
For free. It's a Metal Gear Solid game this November, and also Remember Me, which, if you remember, I quite enjoyed back in the summer.
Yes.
Which means you can also play that for free when it comes out in November, so it's well worth it for the sort of stuff you get.
Okay.
So, play it when it comes out on that at some point in the future, because it surely will.
I remember us talking about Heavy Rain and being sort of generally quite sarcastic about that as well. We're quite sarcastic about a lot of stuff. We model ourselves on those two Muppets in the gallery.
We do.
That heckle a lot. But I think the upshot of it all was that it was okay, it was interesting, it was a bit arty. But we were talking a fair bit, I think, about... Would we like to see sequels now that this technology is here and these studios are set up and this is now a thing? And is that what this is? Well, it's not actually a sequel, but it's a sort of spiritual successor, more in line.
It's the same people using the same technologies and the same things, refined it slightly, but not enough.
So that's what I was sort of getting at. Is this an improvement? Is this a development of that genre? Is this worth looking at more of in the future?
It didn't have me screaming at the screen like the ending of Heavy Rain did.
Okay, so the writing's perhaps a bit more
coherent. Yes, it doesn't break every single rule of the murder mystery. But
you were explaining the ending of Heavy Rain to me, and I was dumbfounded as well, to be honest.
I don't like characters lying, but characters you play can't lie to the player. Wrong, bad, do not do.
There's probably something about fourth walls or something there, but yeah. It just didn't make any sense at all. So this one makes a bit more sense, hopefully.
Yeah, it's a bit dafter, but the plot doesn't have any major...
So would we want to see more of this sort of thing? Or?
Yes, I think we should. I'd like to see... I think that David Cage needs a guiding hand, though. He needs somebody to help him along the way, somebody a bit more responsible who can say, yeah, you're a bit out there, you need to add a bit more gameplay, you need to rein in this plot a bit. I think that the problem is he just doesn't have that executive producer type guy holding his hand and giving him the odd slap around the face when he needs it with a wet fish.
But time and money well spent nonetheless, sounds of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people hate it, but it is definitely worth a play if you enjoy games.
And you're unlikely to find a quick time birth event anywhere else.
Well, there's going to be a rash of them next year.
Is that the new thing, is it?
Yeah.
Right. Gynecology Simulator 2014.
Don't say that to anybody, because somebody will make it. There's already the Surgeon Simulator. It's one step along from Surgeon Simulator 2014.
It's just a form of surgery.
Probably. No. If it's a form of surgery, you're doing it wrong and far too aggressively.
I'm going to talk about something else now. I'm going to talk about Assassin's Creed Revelations, which I finally got around to actually putting in the Xbox and playing. I'm so cutting edge. Well, four's out soon, is it?
Yes, in a month.
I'm just now starting 2.3. Yes, this is the third in the Ezio trilogy. This is essentially Assassin's Creed 2, 3. And I'm just really enjoying it. It's very much more of the same. You're not expecting anything different. It's essentially an expansion pack. At the end of Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Ezio had it out with Cesare Borgia and generally sorted Rome out. And I
best
think
fight for Pope.
Punched out the Pope, yeah. I think that was the end of 2, wasn't it? I can't remember.
So, yeah.
But anyway, so So Rome's all sorted, and we pick up Ezio's story as he goes off to Masaif. He's basically found all the writings of Altair, the lead character from the first game. Remember, this is all going on inside Desmond's head.
Not a lot goes on inside Desmond's head, usually.
Well, the overall framing story is the Animus and Desmond in the contemporary world, who is an assassin descendant, and the Animus is a thing that lets you play computer games using your genetic memory, which is actually real, not just a general inclination to hunt meat. But something went wrong at the end of Brotherhood, which I don't really want to spoil, just in case anyone still hasn't played their way through. But and it basically left Desmond in a state where he's losing his mind, literally. And it's just they put him in the Animus to try and hold his brain together in some fashion. So he's basically, I don't know, you don't really get much of Desmond in the real world going on in this one, as far as I can tell so far. But you get Desmond's journey. I'll talk about it in a minute. But so somehow playing computer games with his own genetic memory and reliving Ezio's journey to Constantinople, Istanbul, whichever. Somehow is helping to help Desmond put his brain back together or something. I don't know. I'm hoping that gets a bit more explained as I go, to be honest. Basically, you're in Istanbul. It's the same old format. It's the big old city, a curiously rectilinear version of Istanbul that you get to gallop along the rooftops of and run along the streets and blend in with crowds and stab people with hidden blades. Really not a huge amount of different gameplay or anything, really, and you don't. I think, to be honest, if you're onto Revelations, having played from 2, you're not wanting different. You're just wanting
really
more, aren't you? It very much does feel like an expansion pack, which I suppose is what it is. Ezio's a lot older now, and to be honest, I was starting to feel that. It's weird. I don't know if that was a psychosomatic thing or whatever. The opening early stages of his adventures in Masaif and in Istanbul, you know, he's doing a lot of grumbling and oofs and groaning and stuff because he's, I don't know, he's supposed to be in his 50s or something
stage,
you know, and still trying to leap from rooftops and hook things with his blade and generally, you know, do lots of nasty obligatory vehicle level early on that nearly put me off the whole damn thing. You're having to chase a cart with one of the Templar mercenaries getting away with one of the MacGuffins, and you're having to be dragged along on a rope behind the cart, and you have to steer around bushes and stuff. And
yeah.
I just thought, oh god, a vehicle level. I hope they're getting this out of the way early. They seem compelled to put one in. There was a big chariot, a big sort of cart chase with Leonardo da Vinci in an earlier one.
I do wonder if anyone actually enjoys those bits.
I hate them. They're really flow breaking, and they're not what I've signed up for at all. And I can understand they want to put a few different bits and pieces in to mix things up, but you know what, the reason you're playing an Assassin's Creed game is because you want to gallop along a rooftop and then jump on a Templar knight with a hidden blade.
Yeah,
you know, that's basically the format, and when it lets you do that, it's fine. It's more of the same. You've got all the same things. We got bombs. That's the new mechanic.
Yeah.
You can craft bombs from a casing, a powder, and an ingredient, and you can have three different sorts of bombs: tactical bombs, diversionary ones, and lethal bombs. So yeah, basically a sort of grenade mechanic, but where you can mix and match the effects and range and radiuses of your grenades to do different things. It's interesting, but it's not hugely game changing. I only found myself using the thunder bombs to blow up sealed well tops.
Yeah,
because the well, you can hide in the wells by hanging on the inside. And in this game, some of them are boarded up, and you have to use the bombs to blow open the top.
Well, you have to board them up, otherwise you end up with assassins in them constantly.
Yeah, yeah, and no one can get to the water. More of that, really, galloping around. The city's, I don't know, it looks, I have no idea what Istanbul looks like. I worry that, I've written there, getting some warped ideas of history. I'm worried that my knowledge so far of history is being slowly replaced by Assassin's Creed games.
That's not a problem.
Okay,
don't worry
enough
about it.
It's going to land me in trouble one day on an overseas trip, I'm sure.
By the way, I have signed you up for Mastermind.
My specialist subject, history. Yes, all of it. I've played enough Assassin's Creed that I know all of history now and how it worked. It's largely rectilinear cities and hiding in wells.
And it's usually the Templars.
Yeah, and haystacks. It was always the Templars' fault, yeah. It really is... They are starting to blur between each other. I saw you playing some of Assassin's Creed 3, which I've not got to yet, and I was quite pleased and glad that finally we're in some forests and hills and things.
Yeah,
because these cities, I mean, I like, you know,
the 2 trilogy is really a bit samey, and it was pushing it a bit.
Well, even the first, it's not that different from the first game either. Assassin's Creed 1 and all 3 of the 2 games, all three of the Ezio games. It is all... I mean, they do a really good rectilinear city you can cavort around and hide in and gallop along the top of and stuff. And if you want that kind of thing, that's your go-to game. But, yeah, you start to think...
It's one of the reasons I'm
What other cities in the world can we make you run along the rooftops of?
I'm quite looking forward to 4, because 4 is a big open-world thing with islands and water and boats.
I mean, I suppose the Assassin's Creed really lives on the strength of its parkour sequences, which are, to be fair, done very well. And this game carries on that tradition. So, yeah, I sort of wonder about... Because I saw you sort of jumping from tree to tree in the New England forests and stuff in the third game and wondering how well that flowed.
That flows quite well.
Yeah,
okay. Although you do get to recognise the routes quite easily.
Yeah. You got your usual collection of massive underground hidden tombs that clearly don't exist. The first one, is it under the Galata Tower in Istanbul? You go through the door and you fall through a thing and suddenly you're in this enormous cavern system with huge thundering waterfalls and things. And you're thinking... no one builds a city on top of that.
It could be worse. In Uncharted 3, there's one of them underneath London.
It's brilliant. It's sort of approaching Bone Kickers levels of historical accuracy at that point. But
I miss Bone Kickers. Let's bring it back.
But, it's a lot of fun, though. And particularly those hunting for the key sequences inside the unlocked tombs, they're fantastically cinematic. I mean, they're not technically very challenging, you know, as long as you can generally see the route you've got to hoof it along as you're chasing the boat or whatever. But it just, the music, the visuals, the flow of it all, it really does bring together just... what they do and very well. It's great. You got the Desmond's journey bit. Meanwhile, in the real world, in the Animus bit where his brain's falling apart.
I'm not entirely sure that's the real world.
No, well, whatever.
In another pocket of his
exaggerated nervous breakdown, he's actually himself and...
Well, no, he's not himself, is he? He's no. Nathan Drake.
He's... Pretty much. You've got this weird... You've got the B story, which is essentially Desmond trying to, you know, make some sense of it all and get his own mind back. And that seems to take place through some very, I don't know, quite uninspiring portal-alike that they sort of tacked on the side. That you're in this section of partition-based data memory blah, blah, blah because of some science, where you don't even have a body. You're just a disembodied first-person view, who can create white blocks and ramps and try and work your way up and down through this vast, sort of quite stark, minimalist, modern concrete-type environment, which really reminded me a lot of Portal, but without any of the humour. And every so often you'll reach a room and Desmond will play, you know, recite a bit of his own memory at you about how he grew up in the Black Hills and was trained by the Templars. And I don't know, I'm on about 3 out of about 7 or 8 of those, and I'm not that fussed, to be honest. It's an interesting bit of platformer, but it's just nothing near as elegant and finessed as being Ezio charging around
One
Istanbul.
Thing I will say about Revelations is it has the most poignant bit in any computer game I've ever played.
Okay.
You've not got there yet.
I don't know if I've got there. Is it quite near the end, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you get there, you'll know it and you'll think, oh, actually, this is a really nice bit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing, because obviously I know that Assassin's Creed 3 is not about Ezio. We've got a whole new person, a whole new time
prison. It is him bowing out.
And the thing is, I'm sort of reflecting on this as I'm playing through and I'm thinking, I really like Ezio. He's a top bloke, and I just found myself really wanting to find out all of his story all the way through. I mean, Altair is basically a dick in the first game. He's quite arrogant. He's not a nice character by any sense.
Well, no, he's incredibly arrogant. Gets all his abilities taken right at the start. So arrogant.
Right near the start of the game, because of his pride, he gets demoted back to novice, you know, conveniently giving the player a chance to learn all his abilities. But and Desmond is just a real sort of cipher. You really just don't learn enough about Desmond.
Desmond is as blank as any one of Nolan North's other characters.
Fair enough. But Ezio, you know, he's a likeable, charismatic sort of character, and you've by the time you're on Revelations, you've put in so many hours helping him get his life sorted out and so on, that you're really feeling quite invested in the character. So, I'm absolutely wanting to see. I mean, I'm still quite umming and ahhing about not whether I should bother with Assassin's Creed 3 or not.
No, I think you should. 3 is
Do I want to have to meet a whole new character and grow to like him as much as I've gotten on with Ezio, who, you know, feels like one of the gang.
3
you know?
Has some really nice moments in it and some nice stuff.
Yeah, I probably will go there eventually, I'm sure.
Well, 4's out soon, so you're 2 behind, so you can get 3 this time next year.
Also, this is likely to be the last thing I buy for the 360, the Revelations. And I'm playing through it and looking at it and thinking, God, I wish I was on the PC now, because I've been playing a lot of...
I do have it on PC. Yeah, it's a lot nicer on PC.
My PC now is currently fairly a good deal more powerful than the Xbox and SD Tele combo I've got. So, yeah, I'm just really enjoying playing through it. And I can't wait to see how the story ends.
Okay, I'm going to talk. I finished GTA 5. I finished two games this week. I'm so chuffed.
Wow, you're like a gamer and everything.
I know. Yes, I finished GTA 5.
Okay.
It has.
Yep. Spoiler alert!
Are you sitting down?
Yeah.
A satisfying ending.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get to the end of 4? Or did you just...
Yeah, no, I got to the end of 4, which did not have a satisfying ending. Because the plot on 4 was just silly on every possible level and was not honest to itself.
Right.
Whereas the plot of this is relatively honest to itself. Okay, all the way through, you feel like there's every other mission is missing because you just don't seem to have the right
amount of
information.
Name the primary emotion you felt upon seeing the end of 5. Go on, you can do it. Emotional lexicon.
I'm not very good with emotions.
Well, there's happy, there's unhappy. No, and there's indifference.
Satisfaction.
Any of the three emotions.
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction all right. For all three people.
Okay, well, that's good.
I would imagine if I'd taken one of the other endings, there may not have been satisfaction for all of them.
Oh, are there alternates available?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I, of course, went for the one which is going to see the most happiness spread around.
That's pretty much your mission in life.
For the initial group of people, the most satisfaction spread around. Everyone else around them, not so much.
Hey, give me a break. I can't look after everyone. Yeah, I'm like that with Mass Effect. You know, I'm just trying to sort my crew out. The rest of the universe can sort themselves.
There were sniper rifles involved, many, many guns, chasing people down. So a lot of people had a bad day when I was getting my satisfaction. But to be fair, they were all people who were slightly more dicks than I'd been in the game.
Whatever helps you sleep at night. As long as you enjoyed the experience.
At the end, I basically came to the conclusion that the game has a couple of problems.
Mm. Okay.
There aren't that many problems in the game, but there's only a couple that sums it all up.
Yeah.
One is you can't easily tell that the next bullet's about to kill you.
Oh, is it? We got very short health bars.
Well, no, you're not looking down at the health bar, and it doesn't do enough of the big red around the screen like everything else does.
It tries for one of these minimal UIs. I notice it. All it shows you is your sat nav.
Yeah, and you've got your health around that and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you get killed too often because you're not paying attention to that health bar.
Yeah,
and you just need a bit more indicator elsewhere. And the other problem is it does that classic GTA thing of using driving a long way across the city as a cutscene.
Oh,
so the characters will start talking.
When they reach certain distance, yeah.
And the problem with that is, one, you always get there before the end of them stopping talking because you are a better driver than the amount of time.
Saints Row the Third does that quite a lot, and I found myself having to just pull over and wait for them to finish talking before I go to the waypoint.
Especially, it'll tell me I've got to go down this route, which involves going all the way down this hill, turn around and come along the bottom of the hill.
Well, the solution
to that is to go off the top of the hill, land down the bottom of the hill.
So they're both upside down, hanging from their seatbelts in a flaming wreck, talking about the game
that's the other problem. When you are upside down, hanging from your seatbelt in a flaming wreck, you fail the mission because you die, and then you have to do it again, and you have to go through the entire speech again, which is about 6 hours long.
Yeah. Well, I think in Saints Row's case, they didn't generally dish out any absolutely important plot exposition. Usually it was just them shooting the breeze, as it were, on the way to and from the waypoints.
Yeah.
But it was stuff you wanted to hear because you like the characters.
Oh, yeah, but in this case, there's an awful lot of characters saying bad words to each other as every other word, and
Plus, if you rush things in the Saints Row A to B cutscene type of affair, you might miss on some of the singing sections, which are brilliant.
Oh, yeah, 4's got some fantastic singing. Up until the point where the bad guy joins in and then ruins it for everyone involved.
Oh, looking forward to that.
And at the end, Trevor really becomes the character that you like the most.
Talked a lot about him on the previous show. Yeah.
And
is there some sort of redemption for him? Or?
No.
No?
No.
It's not really a...
No, he does. He falls in love, which makes him a bit nicer, with the nice female character that everyone says doesn't exist.
Okay.
Patricia. Okay, she's a little bit naive, maybe, and married to a mobster. But she's the nice character that everyone missed. She is actually nice. There's nothing wrong with her.
I understood that there were no important or interesting female characters in this game.
She's not very important. She's definitely not interesting, but she's nice.
Fair enough.
She just wants out of her marriage.
Right.
Yeah. Trevor in it really does come to define the game. And I don't know whether or not you do the thing at the end with anyone else, but I ended up doing them with Trevor, possibly because he was the last one I used on my list of stuff to do, or possibly it always has to be Trevor, but it just fitted it being Trevor.
Oh, fair enough.
So, yeah, it's really good.
So what does it do? Is that game over now, or does it just dump you out on the now-go-explore-the-world type ending?
Go finish everything else.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's an open world. Open world games cannot end.
Yeah, you get the story, which more and more becomes the tutorial, really, but it's the sandbox you're there for.
Then, of course, there's GTA Online, which means you've got all the online stuff to do.
Okay.
Which I haven't actually played since last weekend, because last weekend, after the last... Well, after last weekend's batch of yes, we fixed all the problems now, I still couldn't get a multiplayer game.
Oh.
And there's been two more batches of yes, we fixed all the problems now, it's fine.
So we've got...
And I'm waiting till tomorrow's fixed all the problems now because it'll be fine, because I think that maybe that might be closer to being fine.
Yeah, so we're sort of waiting. It's a certain amount of QA issues there.
Yeah, I don't trust them to be finished yet, put it that way.
Okay, are we talking wait for a Game of the Year edition, or just plunge in anyway, it's fine?
We don't know what any of the DLC is going to be, and also we don't know what the longevity of GTA Online is going to be. So, because it's a little bit...
These tacked on multiplayer
It's trying not to be a tacked on thing. It's
they don't last very long.
It's trying to be a big new game of its own right, which could have been sold separately. Set in the same city.
Yeah.
But it's whether or not it's going to survive the fact that everyone's a dick in it and they're skinny people. So that's the question, or whether or not it just works better as a cooperative game.
Well, yeah, I'm increasingly of the opinion that pick-up grouping with random strangers is a weird, crazy aberration, and these things should only be done with your friends, really.
So
there you go.
We'll just have to see how well this plays out over the next couple of months.
Yeah.
That's all I have left to say on GTA 5.
Right, I'll talk about Planet Side 2. It was Vanu night this week, which was a terrible shame because I've fallen in love with the Vanguard, the new conglomerate's really useful and quite effective tank. But no, we were doing Vanu in the end because I came up with another crazy concept squad idea. Flying Doctors.
Okay.
Yes, it's where everyone rolls a medic and we all get in a galaxy and we fly to where we're needed and heal the wounded and then fly away to the next battle.
And get shot down.
We got shot down, and then when we landed, even though the medic gets a pretty decent, reasonable light machine gun type of affair, we all ran out of bullets and then died. And also, we were also busy trying to heal each other that none of us was shooting back, which meant the enemy just got three or four goes at killing each of us.
Yeah.
So,
was it a fail? Like,
we did some science. The flying bit was all right, but then we already knew that. The galaxy is a very useful piece of kit when applying.
Galaxy can fly.
The galaxy
from A to
does
B.
fly, yes. Although, we did have some confusion. New chap joined us this week, Cutout Panda. He came along and we inducted him into the squad. And there was a little bit of confusion about which of the two galaxies we were taking was the real galaxy and which of the two galaxies which I was piloting was the decoy galaxy. This was another of my ideas, you see.
Uh-huh.
I thought we'd take two planes, mostly because we accidentally launched two planes at once and I didn't really do the rotor properly. Anyway, so I thought, well, that's okay. I'll fly ahead and go in first, and they'll see my galaxy and go, ooh, galaxy.
Warn
and
them, in other words.
No, they'll start opening fire on my galaxy and everything and seeing warm me as the big threat.
Warm up on you before shooting the guys behind.
Ah, they'll be so busy looking at me, they won't see the other galaxy coming in that's actually got the troops in, you see? Decoy, fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Cutout Panda hopped in the wrong one and was in my galaxy. And I did say, I think, but I can't remember. It all got a bit confusing and he doesn't know how we roll, you see? But I think he does
badly.
Well. Yeah, well, anyway, so I went...
It's also a wonky way, like a wheel's crashed.
I went screaming in with the decoy galaxy to the tech plant, and it's a kind of sort of big loop-shaped structure with a large flat piece and a big gap underneath, and I thought, I'm going to barnstorm it. That'll wake him up. And I did.
Did the sound of ripping metal wake them up?
No, it just fit. I'm quite a good galaxy pilot. So flush with a large amount of schadenfreude, hubris, or whatever the hell it is, I went and tried to loop the loop out for the top of the structure and back through for another go, and I miscalculated my rate of ascent, and I sort of basically landed the galaxy on top of the structure, upside down and on fire, and it sort of blew up and killed me and Cutout Panda. So I hope he comes back next week. But I could understand why he wouldn't. But that plan did work, because the other galaxy came in and dropped troops, and they did stuff, and we won. So that was all right.
So everyone got XP apart from you?
Yeah, well, I was busy respawning and being on fire.
Yeah.
But yeah, so...
Did you crash so badly you respawned on fire?
Got a special respawn tie there, yeah. Yeah, so Decoy Galaxy, quite good if you've got the resources. But on the whole, just use a galaxy with a useful squad of diverse roles and combined arms, you know, like the game was designed. I keep pushing the envelope, see, that's my problem. I'm a pioneer.
Yeah,
but now we know that a squad made up entirely of medics. Well, sometimes it seems like the enemy are using squads made entirely of medics because you'll be shooting at them and they just won't stay dead.
They're just cheating.
No, well, what it is that they've got three or four medics in a squad of 12, and those medics are just very good at staying back.
Everyone else has guns to keep you away from their medics.
Yeah, exactly. They're just, their medics are just very good at not being killed first, which I think is what you've got to try and avoid being killed.
Yeah.
Try and be killed last if you're your squad's medic, I think, would be good. Anyway, I'm looking forward to next week, because we'll be NC again, which is the correct side, and not stupid and rubbish like Vanu. I've gone native really quite badly with the new conglomerate, it seems. I just like the Vanguard. I wish we... You know what I miss? I miss in Planetside 1, right? In Planetside 1, each empire was had two of the islands, of the 10 islands, which were designated as their home continents. Those are the ones connected to their warp gate, the sanctuary place. And when you capture, if an enemy team captures both of a side's home continents, they get access to all their stuff.
Ah.
They're allowed to spawn. So if the Vanu managed to capture the NC's two home continents, the Vanu could roll vanguards, and
That's
they'd be
cool.
done out in Vanu colours and everything. It would be brilliant. And that really gave the Vanu an incentive to work hard, because if they were really, really good and played effectively, they would be allowed to use the enemy's equipment instead of their own. And that was such a driving motivator for the Vanu in the first game, and it just isn't there in this first game. We're never going to be able to use vanguards as Vanu. So you start to wonder what's the point in carrying on as Vanu, really. But there you go. I don't know. It's all terribly confusing. But we're still going. Still having fun. That's the main thing.
Excellent.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Okay, I got two quick games now.
Go on then.
F1 2013.
Okay.
I played it out a bit more.
Yep.
It's missing something.
What's it missing?
I don't know. It's the same thing that Grid 2 is missing.
Oh, that wasn't rhetorical. Hang on then, let me have a think. Is it missing Murray Walker?
No, it has Murray Walker.
It has Murray Walker. The real F1 doesn't have Murray Walker.
I know. He was 90 this week.
Blimey. And, there's a man who's lived well.
And is in remission from cancer, which is brilliant.
Ah.
His hip, which he broke falling over on a party ship, is also healed.
If you've got to break your hip, that's how you want to do it, isn't it? Okay, well, it's missing the bit at the end where they shake the fizzy wine about.
It doesn't have that. No, it's got this really... Right. It's missing something on the atmosphere.
The same, you're the expert.
The same thing that Grid 2 had, or didn't have, which is it feels a little flat and empty.
You want crowd noises?
No, it's got those.
Oh.
No, just something about it which doesn't feel right. But I've basically come to the conclusion that my way I'm playing this game is I'm ignoring all of the season and challenges and everything. And the only thing I really want this game for, which is not a bad thing, is the ability to drive round and round and round an unlimited time around the track, just getting better and better on each lap.
Yeah.
Which,
it is, from all you've said, it sounds like a game that is absolutely about finessing and honing.
I don't think you need that career mode. The career mode's flat. There was an article on Autosport this week in the subscription service.
Career mode is what? When you have to go and do the whole championship?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's an article on Autosport Plus saying how the big problem with the F1 game is it's held back by the license rights on F1. They can't agree to let the game do anything interesting. Like, you can only have the current season there. You can't transfer drivers around like you can in, say, FIFA. You can move players between teams which they're not actually in. In this, you can't.
Yeah.
So it's very, very hamstrung. And, I just think driving around is such a pleasurable thing in it that you don't really need much else.
Yeah, fair enough.
And the last game I'm going to mention is Thomas Was Alone.
Okay.
Now, this is a game which
It sounds suspiciously like an indie...
It is an
indie artwork.
It is an award-winning indie platformer. Now, this is a game I've been meaning to play for ages because it's award-winning. And
award-winning indie platformers are very important, and we must like them.
And by Mike, what's his name, who's doing Volume. But yes, it's a very, very well-respected game. Now, the best way I can describe this game is Thunderbirds meets Assassin's Creed. It only gets the Assassin's Creed bit because it's voiced by Danny Bloody Wallace.
Oh, right.
I don't like Danny Wallace. But the rest of it is Thunderbirds.
With two little ships pushing blocks around in a maze.
Effectively, yes. Yeah, you've got this blocky platformer with different...
I've got to find an emulator and that.
Oh, yeah, just go on to the Spectrum sites. They it's play all there in the browser.
Just, oh, God, you don't even have emulators anymore. It's just a Java controller, isn't it?
Yeah, but this, you basically got these Thomas, which is a long rectangle. There's a shortish squat one and some others. And they all have different abilities. Like, Thomas can fall as long as he wants to jump reasonably far. Others can have people stand on the move. Some can float in water.
Does it have a tedious stream of consciousness narrative going on?
Yeah, by Danny Wallace.
Okay, right.
Which is where it falls over.
There you go. Award-winning indie platformer. It's basically award-winning indie platformers are exactly the same games that we were playing 30 years ago, but they have tedious stream of conscious narratives going over the top, being all pretentious.
The platforming's good, as far as platforming goes.
How's the tedious streaming pretentious narrative?
Pretentious.
Jolly good.
But yeah, I just don't enjoy platforming enough. So it's getting a bit hard to actually make myself go back and actually play it again, which is what I knew from the start, which needed to be played because there's some interesting stuff in there, which I needed to see.
Interesting, but... important, yeah. Valid, artistic. Well, words you don't tend to associate with entertainment.
Interesting from a design point of view.
Yes.
Not from an artistic
point of view. You're really not selling it to me, to be honest.
I
was probably never going to buy it anyway.
No, you were never going to buy it anyway.
Have a go, dear listener. Let us know what you think.
Well, most of the listeners have already played it because it's been out for
ages. Oh, it's just me then, is it?
Yeah.
Fine, I'll get my coat.
Yeah, and that's it for me for games.
Right, okay. What have you learned this week?
I learned that if you're, say, quite happily making music on a Sunday afternoon and you double-click on the wrong bit and the UI brings up this mandatory 1.8 gig download to download a bunch of new samples, it makes me a very angry person.
Wow. That's quite a specific thing. I learned this week that the Da Vinci Code is essentially Countdown the Movie.
Why did you watch
it? I don't know. It was on and I had guests round and I couldn't find the remote, and so we ended up sitting there and watching Tom Hanks running and jumping and solving cryptic Guardian crossword puzzles for about 2 hours, and I still don't really quite understand it. Something about Jesus. I want my 2 hours back.
Yeah.
I just want someone to poke me in the ear with an unbent coat hanger until that part of my memory's gone.
That can be arranged, actually.
All right, well, we're going to go off and do that then. Do your spiel.
Yeah, you can see our site at howtomurdertime.com, where you can leave us comments on the show telling us how wrong we are about everything we play.
2 hours, and there wasn't a single assassin turned up either. Yeah, it was just Templars, and apparently they were the good guys. There was something very wrong
it's
there.
It's made by the Templars.
Yeah, Templar propaganda. So carry on.
You can also go along to iTunes and leave us a nice little review on that, saying how great we are so that other people will come along and listen. You can go catch me on Moving On.
Tom Hanks didn't even leap off a single rooftop.
He does in the sequel, I assume. You can catch me on Moving On, which is at psychon.org.
Although he did the slowest parkour sequence you've ever seen across the top of the Pompidou Centre or the Louvre or whichever the hell pyramid one it is.
Did he fall off and die?
No, he just sort of slowly shuffled along it a bit and then looked intently through the glass.
Yeah. Anyway, Moving On this week is going to be Get Carter.
Not the Da Vinci Code, then. No. I think you guys should really do
this.
We're
not allowed to do the Da Vinci Code.
It's
2000 or later.
Oh, God.
It's one of the reasons why that rule exists.
Get Carter is very good, though.
Yes.
Looking forward to
it. Oh, you don't know if it's the remake or not?
I'm not going to talk to you ever again if it's the
remake. No, it's the original.
Okay.
Which is a brilliant film. I might just support the episode. Anyway, you can also...
hang together, we're nearly there.
I've lost my train of thought completely.
You can do a thing with some apples and some eye fruit or something.
Yeah, you can also go along to thepodcast.com with a K and see us,
podcast.
Our show and other stuff. And also you can go to our Steam group and join our inexplicably large number of people.
Yeah, that's nearly doubled in a week or two. That's a bit frightening. Hello, all you new people. Welcome.
I'm not entirely sure they listen to the show.
please pass on our thanks to whoever sent you here.
Yeah, the percentage number increase on the show and the percentage number increase on the Steam group do not correspond.
Are we not converting page views or something?
No, we're not.
Are we not paradigming our target brackets?
We're screwing up our SEO.
Well, with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.